to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
Top of the morning to you, Brains. How you doing? We've got a great, great show today. We've got a fantastic guest. But before we get started, I wanted to share something with you. I wanted to share a poem that I wrote based upon a family that I met one day when I was out on my way to an event, and it's called 500 Years Old. Life has took its toll. Baby girl, she looking 500 years old. She got them kids, them badass grandkids, nowhere to live, can't pay the rent. She's an alcoholic and a victim of domestic violence. They're both chemically dependent. Somebody needs to call in an intervention. And he, well, he too. He looks 500 years old. He's spackled and sprayed with sprinkles of gray. And all around his mouth, it's white and crusty. See, that's where his crack pipe lay. And his teeth and his feet, they look like copper and coal. That young man is looking 500 years old. They're worn out, tired souls, and their bed is a blanket on top of a cement slab. And that smell, Lord Jesus, it make you want to gag. Here he come. Yo, sister, yeah. Look here. Can you lend a hand? 35-year-old white man trying to help this sister raise these half-Mexican children. You looking like brand new money. Don't stare at me. Don't act like you don't know. You see my kids sitting over there, they hungry, and they got on dirty clothes. I turned around, I stopped in my tracks, and I stared, and I looked at his family, and I felt bad. I reached down in my purse, and I gave him every single dollar I had. I walked away, and I raised my hands, and I thanked the Lord that on that day, that was not my black ass looking 500 years old. So today, we got another testimony of a person that sees it from the other side, that sees it from a side of the perspective of giving a handout and also giving a hand up. It's very important. My guest today is Kevin Ross. He's going to open up and share his trials, tribulations with addiction, and the saga of a man finding recovery and redemption. His mission is to try to make it one strike at a time, better for someone else. Brain, scoot over. Make room for my friend, Kevin Ross. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, what's going on, April? How you doing?
It's all good. So tell my brains who you are and a little bit about your story, please.
Well, my name is Kevin Ross. I'm born and raised in South Central L.A., went to the South Central schools. My father is the Ross of Harrison Ross Mortuary. I was born with two fantastic parents in the home, not your average home in South Central L.A., brought up by two great parents. And on my path in life, I made a few wrong turns and a whole bunch of wrong decisions, and it got me in a whole bunch of wrong places. And I ended up doing a lot of wrong things. During my lifetime, I've been in and out of institutions, in and out of recovery centers, and I'm just trying to turn my life around and trying to make a difference for some people in life today. Everybody needs a hand up, not a handout. Very
right.
Important.
I understand. So you went to Fauchet Junior High School. I went to Mount Vernon.
Yes, ma'am. Yes,
and
ma'am.
We both
yes,
went
ma'am.
To Dorsey High School, and you're very still
yes,
connected with that group of individuals from Dorsey High School, and that's really good. That's really good. I'm glad that you're still connected with your community. So after you've went through that, tell me a little bit about your struggle with addiction.
Well, my addiction started long before I even knew I was addicted. I was drinking and smoking in junior high school. I think I smoked my first cigarette. I was about 10 years old. My mother smoked Pall Malls and Lucky Strikes, and that was the first cigarette I ever smoked. And
with the filter or without?
Without. I don't do filters. I'm going all the way wrong. And I smoked my first cigarette at 10 in the bathroom, and my mother discovered somebody smoking in the bathroom, and she knew it wasn't her because she wasn't in there, and I lied about that. As time went on, going to junior high school, was probably drinking in the seventh grade. I know I was drinking in the seventh grade. And, you know, you got those cats at the liquor store on your way to school who would buy a guy who's 12 years old a bottle of pink champagne. And I partaked in that, and it just grew, you know, weed and alcohol. It turned into cocaine, rock cocaine, and, you know, I was a test dummy. I tried everything. And,
wow.
During my life prisons and, you know, about a life of crime.
Wow. So tell me about your recovery. When did you see the light?
The light was always dim. You know, my first interaction, I had a friend who went to a recovery home and stayed a year, and I never really thought that, you know, what was going to happen was going to ever happen. But I thought if I hung around him, he could go and I could hang around him and he would jump on me, which wasn't the story. I didn't know I had to go myself.
Right.
And that was in 1996, and I'd like to say I never used again after that, but that's far from the truth. Many years of 2 years sober, 3 years getting loaded, 3 years sober, you know, on and on and on in and out of recovery and recovery homes and jails. And, you know, I try to list the things, you know. Committing felonies was part of my life at the time, so.
Well, you know, you had to
stay
up on game. You had to keep your pockets fluid, because I know Mama Ross,
she ain't putting
up with it.
No. Great
She's
support
sweetest,
system, but, yeah.
Be sure to tell her I said hello, too, from the edge. She's sweeter than chocolate cake at Mama Ross.
Yes, ma'am. My greatest support.
And you have a beautiful daughter, Sydney, and your beautiful wife, Sheila. How did that affect your life as being a parent and being a husband?
Wow. The parent thing, I didn't never know nothing about being a parent. I had my daughter when I was 36. My father was 60 when I was born.
Mm.
So there's a triple gap between me and my father, you know. When I became a parent at 36, I didn't have no idea. You know, I'd been running wild, in and out of prisons, on drugs, and then all of a sudden I got sober and had a child.
Right.
You know, you think the child's going to keep you sober, and that's the farthest thing from the truth. And raising a daughter and being, she's my only and I'm my mother's only, you know, we're like the onlys. It was very, very hard. And on top of being addicted and being in and out of her life, and then after I got sober, when she was 12 years old, she wasn't too happy about it.
it's a change, but now she has an opportunity to see the man that you are today and the man that you're working on to be in the future. I want to ask you a question about getting sober. Tell me when you got sober this last time and the strides that you're making.
Wow. Prior to being sober, a year prior to getting sober, I lived in an alley in a makeshift tent the whole nine yards for a year. Even though I was where I was at, friends and family still found me, came and saw me, made sure I was still alive. I've always had great friends and great support. Always.
Right.
I guess
right.
I'm the kind of guy everybody loves, Kevin Ross. I just didn't know how to love myself.
Well, you're a popular kind of guy, you know. You got that charisma. We're both Leos, so definitely, you know, we're hard chargers, and we really kind of like to be out there and be a support for people. Tell me about the social service organization that you currently work with. It's Small Gestures, Big Smile. Tell me about that.
Yes, it's a group. Before I get started, April, if you don't mind, I'd like to acknowledge every member and non-active member in my group who supports Small Gesture, Big Smile. You know, this is really not about me. This is about all the great people in my group, because what you see being done by my group is not a sole thing done by me. It takes a group of people to do that you see the things that's done. You know,
absolutely.
I have a heart, and everybody has a heart, but my heart can't do all what you see. The things that I give away, the things that are given to me to get be given away. So it has to be a group thing. And my organization is called Small Gesture, Big Smile. And I'd like to acknowledge a few people in my organization. I'd like to say, tell you how it started, if you don't mind.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Yeah. It also started because I know how it is to for somebody to offer you something clean, a clean pair of clothes, shoes. And after I got sober, September 2nd, 2012, I just started doing small things for people out in the community, and I would just write on my Facebook, I did a small gesture and got a big smile. That was just all I would say, and as time went on, I started showing people what I was doing and, you know, asking people for donations, and it started taking a life of its own, and a friend of mine, Roger Jefferson, called me and was like, "Kill, man, I love what you're doing, but I see a bigger picture. Would I like to start an organization?" And I was, man, I'm kind of cool, man. And he's like, no, kid, this is bigger than you see. And so we formed a board of Roger Jefferson, Michael Winston, Sherman Thomas, and Kathy Porche and Jerome Covington are my board members. And I'd like to say that without them, I probably would have just stayed where I was at doing what I was doing, and they had a bigger picture. But the name of my group is Small Gesture, Big Smile. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, and we're on Twitter. And there you can see. And I also want to say that I team up with the Ella Foundation and a group called Hands Helping Others. And we do an annual Christmas giveaway, which is very successful. We do 300 kids. We give away 100 bikes a year, every year. And those are just a few of the things that we do.
Wow, that is phenomenal work. That is really mission-driven work. So now, who do you help besides the overlooked and underserved? I know that, you know, on your page, you also provide resources, you provide furnishings, you let people know where there's affordable housing, you tell about food drives, you give job information, how to get qualified for certain things. I mean, you go above and beyond. So when you go out, you know, we have to be very careful as individuals approaching the homeless because they are multi-layered. There's a lot of issues. It's not just drugs. It could be mental illness. It could be, you know, PTSD. There's a lot of things. So firstly, I want you to start by telling me your approach when you approach homeless people. And then the second thing I want you to tell us is what individuals should be aware of and be cautious of when they approach the homeless.
Well, April, I'd like to first say that the terminology homeless is not a terminology that I use.
Okay.
I use less fortunate. I touch you with that because people, you see social media and media address a person, they don't even know the person, and they deem them homeless, and they haven't even asked the person, do they have a home? And that's something that I have a problem with, but to go on with your subject is what I do is I'm just driven by what I see. I know my people. I know the demeanor. I just know, when you're approaching people out there, they're really overwhelmed, period. Living a life on the street is not an easy job. If you think about a person who wakes up with nothing, who has to feed themselves, has to drink water, who has to smoke cigarettes, who have to do it, and they wake up with no money, and by the end of the day, they've conquered all those, that's a real, real smart individual. Mm-hmm. A lot of us wake up with money and able to take care of our tasks. Those people out there in the streets have to take care of those tasks with no money.
Right.
So I'm just driven. I'm just God-driven. I see them, God bless, you know, they put them in my path. I never know where they come from. People introduce me to them. I know them. I've been there with them. I go back to the same places I was at. I still go back to the same place where I lived in Alley and still help the same people who are there, still there, you know, 6 years later. And,
right.
You know, to when you do approach people, you know, the safety part of it is you just have to be able to read people's eyes and, you know their heart when you approach them. You know, not put yourself in a bad situation when you see a bad situation. People can see mental illness sometimes. It's something that you can't see really. But if you see a bad situation, I wouldn't approach it. You know, you'll get your chance. You can come back. That's just
right,
how
right.
I feel about it.
I had to do an exercise here on my community council where we had to sleep out on the street with the homeless. And let me tell you, it was an eye-opener, okay? It was not that big, fluffy comforter laying up next to Mr. Magnificent eating, eating bacon and eggs in the morning. It was a whole nother thing. And, I mean, we had to be stripped of everything, everything but
wow.
your name. Yeah, and it was a cold piece. It was a cold piece. So
I might have to take that. I might have to take that challenge.
Oh,
and bring some people with me. That's
a great idea. It was really, again, so I have a compassion. Like yesterday, you know, me and Mr. Magnificent did the recycling. And there was the recycling guy. I deal with him all the time, you know, real cool. But he was so mean to this woman. And I knew that she was, you know, less fortunate. And, I'm going to have to check him when I go back over there. And I gave all my recycling money, I gave it to her. And, you know, my mother friend was there, and he goes, you just gave up. I said, right, that's what I do. You know, that's why I am a conduit. That's why I have this show, is to be fluid and to get the message out. So in getting the message out, I want to play a round of You Think You Know Kevin Ross. Okay, it's going to be some great questions. I want you to be spontaneous. I want you to just kind of, you know, give us what you got. Okay, you ready? You up for
yes,
the challenge?
Ma'am. Let's go with it. Let's go.
All right, so the first one, what is your favorite color?
Blue.
Why?
It's a crazy answer. That's all I know where I live. Blue is just
okay.
a part of my culture. It's just a part of my culture.
And a part of your former set? Go on, call them out. I ain't mad at
yes,
them. I got love
yeah,
for them,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm with the blue people, put it that way.
Okay.
Just, you know.
I feel you. I feel you. If you had one life do-over, what would that be, Kevin?
Wow. Not disappear out of my daughter's life.
All right. I appreciate that. Have you ever eaten any type of seafood besides catfish?
No, ma'am. Never tasted lob, crabster, or shrimp. My mother didn't cook it.
And your mother is from New Orleans, right?
Yeah. And never acquired the taste for it because she never cooked it.
Okay.
Never
if you
put
were...
it in my mouth, anymore.
Well, I don't know. It's a personal preference and choice. I kind of knew the answer to that question. That's why I asked
Yeah,
it.
I know. Yeah, I know.
If you were granted 3 wishes, what would they be?
Have a bigger foundation for my life. Better my relationship with my daughter and be able to leave some type of thing behind in life that would help other people.
Okay. I appreciate that. What would you say to someone that is down on themselves and down on their luck right now?
It won't last.
I feel you. What do you prefer, big and bold or quick and slick?
Say that again.
So what do you prefer, big and bold or quick and slick?
I used to be quick and slick. I don't like that anymore. So big and bold, I guess.
Big and bold, okay.
Yeah.
Kevin Ross, what makes you go boom? Self-development? Okay.
Yeah. Self-development?
Is that what you said, self-development?
No, I said helping others.
Oh, helping others. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Good. What keeps you grounded and keeps you in a good headspace?
Relationships. I'm big on reunification of relationships that my past have broken. I like to fix things that's broke.
Okay. All right. That's good. You're a healer. Who do you let pour into you intellectually?
I'm a reader. I like books.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I like informative books and informative people. And if I must say, I'm a big, big fan of Ayala Prasad.
I'm sorry, who?
Ayala Fasant. I'm a big, big fan of hers. Fix My
Life. Okay.
The show Fix My Life. Yeah, yeah.
She's really powerful. I saw her one time. I took a group to visit the Dr. Phil show. I'll let you know next time she's there so you can go. Yeah, she's real. She's 100.
Yeah, yeah, I love her. I love her. I cried every show she has.
Oh, wow. How do you stay on track? How do you stay focused?
Not living in the future, living in the day. You know, I just I take my tasks one day at a time, and I don't take on more than I can take. I used to take on too much, and I know how to, you know, split it up. You know, I give a third to this, a third to that, a third to this, a third to that, until eventually it becomes a whole, but I don't take on the whole thing at one time. It's too much.
I understand. You know your boundaries. I'm a strong believer in boundaries. What makes you laugh out loud?
Oh, wow, that's a good question. Can't answer that. That's a, you stumped me with that.
Oh, you like
good,
to laugh.
I take that back. I take that back. I like good
okay.
comedians. I take like that back. I like good comedians. I like good comedians, yeah.
Okay.
I like it.
All right. And so when you get to heaven and you see the Father stand before you and you say, Father, forgive me for my sins. Because of them, I have learned what?
I picked up the wrong perspective of life, but now I know better.
All right. That's good. It's all about learning. So, Kevin, tell our brains how they can get in contact with you, provide some resources. You know, I got some big donors. I got some big money brains listening to my show. I need you guys to write a check. Don't nobody need you to be cleaning out your garage with no old clothes. You want a new normal for the less fortunate, and it's about money, and don't have that emotional attachment to money because it's just a vehicle of exchange. If you have some clothes, they better be good looking so somebody can go out and find them a job. If you got some furnishings, I don't want no dirty mattresses. Please, and if you want to volunteer, Kevin, please tell my brains how to get in contact with you and support Small Gestures, Big Smiles.
As I said, we have a Facebook page called Small Gestures, Big Smile. You can join in, ask to join the group. Just type it in the search bar. It'll come up and ask to join the group. You can review the group and see what the group is about before you join. You can join us on Instagram, same name, Small Gesture Big Smile, and we have a Twitter account, Small Gesture Big Smile, same name, and there's a website, smallgesturebigsmile.org. You can check us out there and see what we're all about. Any donations or whatever you'd like to give, money, monetary gifts, or whatever you'd like to give, you can contact us via the website page, and all the information is there. And we have certain mottos that, you know, we go by, which you probably know about, April. You know, when we see something or if we have something of value we'd like to give. I'd like to tell a story real quick, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
I had a person who was moving from Las Vegas back to L.A., and they don't know me, and they found out through my group what was going on, and they contacted me and said, we're leaving, and we're not taking nothing back. And they had a whole apartment.
Wow.
At the same time, I had a guy who was just getting out of rehab who didn't have anything. Him and his girl had went to rehab together, and they both got out at the same time, and they didn't want to be separated. And he found an apartment, and he mathematically figured out a way to get to Vegas. He took a turnaround bus to Vegas for $25. He got a U-Haul truck for $99. He paid the mileage back. They loaded the truck, everything in the apartment the people gave them. The people took nothing, no towels. No. They had a whole one-bedroom apartment from TVs to couch to love seat, refrigerator, stove, and my friend brought it all back and furnished his apartment with it. And
wow.
Those are the type of helpful things that we do. And on our group, if you have that refrigerator or that stove sitting in your garage that's been there for 5 years that's really taking up space, just take a picture of it, post it on the group. We have a motto card. If you spot it, you got it. If you see it, if you know somebody who need it, everybody has somebody in their life that they know who stove went out, need a new stove, getting a new life, don't have anything. This, our group is the place where you can get these type of things. People freely give these things openly without a problem. We've
right.
given away refrigerators, stoves, apartments, furniture. As far as the mattresses stuff is concerned like that, we kind of like stay away from that, from mattresses situations.
Right.
Because of health
issues.
Yeah,
bed bugs and bed mites. That's
yes,
the last
yeah,
thing you
yeah,
need
right,
to do.
Right. We don't kind of like do those. But any and all other items, microwaves, kitchen utensils, you know, new clothes, new socks. You know, one of the biggest things that a homeless person has, not a homeless, excuse me, less fortunate person has asked me for is, man, please tell me you got a pair of socks.
Right.
Please. Ready. I drive around. I always have stuff in my trunk willing to give away. If I spot you, I got you. If I spot you going down the street and I can help you, I'm going to pull over. We're going to change your clothes right then and there as much as we can. I've had to check my website. We have several drastic changes of people right out of my trunk.
Right.
I have fantastic people in my group who do the same. This is not about me, I want to say today, but this is not about
me. Oh,
you.
I know.
This
I
is
know.
About,
it makes
this
change.
Is about the exposure, right. But this is about exposure to be able to help other people. It's not about me.
Right.
It's not about me. I like the sport. I like, you know, being interviewed and all of that, but I just want the exposure to be able to get bigger and do bigger things and help people in bigger places. Eventually that'll come.
So what do you get out of it? You know, because I know, you know, when you're on the grind, I've been on the grind for a long time. What's the ROI? What recharges your battery? You know, it's great to say that I want to be a healer, I want to be a changer, I want to be a help to the world. But again, how does that recharge your battery? What do you get out of it? I know you don't want the publicity, but we're all individuals. We're all human beings. What do you get out of it? If you didn't get anything out of it, you wouldn't fight so hard to do it.
I guess I could say I know how it feels.
Okay.
And I know what it feels like. Sometimes I lay down and I just think about, you know, you want to finish your day with something good.
Right.
You know, you want to be able to say, man, you know, I've had people email me and call me and cry, telling me I wouldn't be able to cook my family a meal if I wouldn't have got that stove. And it was you who helped me get the stove. Just a sense of being fulfilled, I guess, you know.
And a sense of being needed. That's important, too. Nobody just wants to be out there alone. Everybody wants to be needed. So you feel the feels, and that's so important.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I've given people stuff, and they have, I mean, less fortunate people give them clothes. They have flagged me down on the street and said, hey, look, I got those clothes on you gave me.
Oh, wow.
That's a fulfillment. That is a fulfillment. You know,
I know.
To say, man, I did what you told me to do with the clothes, and I just wanted you. When they see me, they excited to let me see them in it.
Right.
I'm just a regular guy. I'm just a regular guy. You know, that's just my fulfillment. I never knew what my niche was in life. I never knew. I fought to try to find it. I wanted to be a felon. I wanted to be hip, slick, and cool. I wanted to be, you know, drug dealer. I couldn't successfully do that. I wanted to be everything, but I never knew that this was going to be my niche in life. I never knew that.
I am so glad that you are in the headspace that you are in right now. You know, we are classmates, we're friends, and I watch you from afar. I support you. I encourage you. You're doing powerful work in the community. I think that there should be more accolades and more visibilities put on your organization, Small Gestures, Big Smiles. Like I told my brains, you know, write a check. Y'all done did it before. You can do it again. Please, brains, go back and listen to other edgy conversations here on Blog Talk Radio. You can find me on social media outlets. You can go to my website and see what's going on. Stay in tune, stay informed, and know that, brains, I need you to be careful who you let take up residency in your head. I mean, folks can come and stop by, but they trying to trick you up, get you caught up, and if you fall down and get down, know that you can get back up. Don't stay frozen. So it's time to thaw out. Keep it moving. Keep it grooving. And that's what we do here on The Edge. There is hope. There is redemption. Kevin, thank you so much for visiting me here on The Edge. Please know that if you got a mission or a cause and if there's anything that I can do to support you and help you, I am there for you 110%, my friend. And again, shout out
thank
to all the
Rachel.
Brains. Oh, my God. We've got like a million new people online. Thank you. Stay tuned. Don't leave me. All right, Kevin?
Thank you. Thank you, April. I want to thank you for the interview and thank you for all that you do for your community.
All right. All right. Be well, brains.